From the Len de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of April, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson at TGM. Joe Jansen, part of the Farm Doc team, ag economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, will discuss yesterday's article dealing with the discrepancy between the size of the crop in Brazil related to CONAB and USDA. And then we'll close out our time together by taking a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
A May corn for the day at $4.37¾. It settled down 5¼. July 4 lower at $4.48½. And December futures, $4.72¾, down 2 cents. May soybeans, $0.01½ lower at $11.66. July down a half at $11.81½. And November beans at $11.74½, up a half cent. Bean meal futures, 80 cents higher. The bean oil for the day, down 65 cents. Soft red winter wheat in the July contract, 10 and a quarter higher at $6.13. And the hard red at $6.30 for the July, up 15 and three quarters of a cent. Live cattle futures were down $1.90 on the day. Feeder cattle off $3.10. And lean hogs were 50 cents lower for 100 pounds. Crude oil at $82.88 a barrel, down 48 cents on this Wednesday afternoon. Greg Johnson now joins us from TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing, here in Champaign County, part of the Elevator System. Hi, Greg. Thank you for being with us. What's happening in Chicago for the day?
It appears as though the three-day winning streak for corn and soybeans will be coming to an end today. We've had some nice run-ups in all three commodities, corn, beans, and wheat. And wheat has another double-digit gain today, but that strength in wheat is not carrying over into the corn and soybeans. We're seeing a little bit of selling pressure as farmers are holding a lot of old crop corn inventory, and I think they're taking advantage of this small rally to let loose of some of that. So we've seen a little bit of resistance here at these month and a half high prices, and as a result, we're just a little bit lower for the day in corn and beans.
So, for instance, when you buy, if you were to buy today, old crop corn, you're taking a position in the marketplace opposite that?
Exactly. We are always perfectly hedged. So when we buy from the farmer, we sell futures on the Chicago Board of Trade. So that commercial selling is what's pressuring that market day, which, you know, works back to basically farmer selling.
All right. Now let's turn our attention to the article that the Farm Doc team posted yesterday. Joe Jansen will be here. He's one of the three authors, the primary, in just a bit to talk about the difference between the CONAB figures and the U.S. USDA numbers. And one of the things that Joe and I did not talk about exactly, and I want to try to make this more clear, you and I have gone through this article together too, is that the USDA's numbers and the CONAB numbers agree on how many soybeans are left in the country in Brazil, but it's both the consumption and the supply sides that are different.
Yeah, you know, you hit it right on the head. You can start with a higher production number, and if you use a higher export number, you still arrive with the same number as if same ending stocks number as if you start with a lower production number and then have lower exports. So 100 minus 40 is still 60, and 80 minus 20 is still 60. So if it just depends what numbers you start with, and it appears that USDA is using higher export figures, but it's hard to argue with how many ending stocks there are. So I guess, you know, what they figure is, since we think they're exporting that much, they must be producing a little bit more. And so USDA is using 99,000 for exports and 99 million, I'm sorry, and 92.2 for CONAB as far as what they're using for exports. So that's a difference of 6.7 million metric tons. And, you know, again, when you look at if you just focus on the production numbers, you would say, oh, you know, there's a big difference. But if you throw in those extra exports, which the USDA is using, then you still can arrive at basically the same ending stocks numbers. It's not perfect, but it's a lot closer than that, you know, 6 to 7 million metric ton difference that we've been talking about the past several months.
Yeah. So the argument from the trade is, hey, if this number's that wrong, these soybeans have to go up in price. However, it feels if the trade is actually using the United States or USDA figures anyway, and you have $11.80 July soybeans and November beans at $11.70 and above, that feels like a pretty comfortable price given the number of exports that are coming into the marketplace, and should stay pretty steady then.
Exactly. And it all boils down to how many are we going to produce this year here in the United States. But yes, the numbers out of South America would argue that, maybe we do have a little bit more production. But if we're exporting more, then the ending stocks number is basically, within shouting distance of the CONAB ending stocks number. So either way, I think the USDA numbers are probably pretty close. And even if they're not, I don't know when we'll find out that they're not. And in the meantime, as you said, the trade basically uses the USDA numbers, for their trading strategies.
Hey, thanks much.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM. Joe Jansen, agricultural economist, a member of the FarmDoc team, now joins us. He, along with Joanna Colucci and Scott Irwin, have penned an article this week about the differences between the numbers produced by the United States Department of Agriculture related to the size of the soybean crop in Brazil this year and historically, and those that come from Brazil's national counterpart to the United States Department of Agriculture. That's called CONAB. Thank you for being with us. I understand why you wrote it, because this year, and it's a wider gap this year than it has been in the past, the difference between the monthly CONAB numbers and the monthly USDA numbers related to this soybean crop, all crops in Brazil, have been particularly wide, something like 8.5 million metric tons. It is an enormous figure.
Yeah, it's kind of caused a lot of uncertainty in the market. Like, what is really the size of Brazil's soybean crop? And you have these two official government agencies producing very different numbers. So about this year now, the widest gap it's been, 8.5 million metric tons, or about 300 million bushels. So it's a pretty significant in the size of the overall global supply and demand balance for soybeans.
So you and your colleagues decided to take a look at this. I suppose, really, you had to try to first figure out how each agency was developing their sets of figures?
Yeah, we hear a lot about the methods that different agencies and different private forecasters use to kind of figure out what the size of the crop is. So we know that we're surveying farmers, we're doing, field scouting, we're looking at satellite data, all kinds of things that kind of go into the methodology. And we kind of really realized that, we acknowledge that these differences exist. Everyone's using kind of a little bit different take, and their interpretations of the same numbers might be very different, or the same satellite imagery data might differ. So ultimately, what kind of has to explain this is the overall supply and demand balance. And that's where we really see this gap opening up, because USDA's estimates for the use of soybeans in Brazil and ending stocks are very different from the numbers produced by CONAB. USDA's been in a situation now where their ending stocks estimate, how much they think is left at the end of the marketing year for soybeans in Brazil, is very close to what I would call pipeline stocks. And CONAB hasn't been there, because their estimates of usage of soybeans in Brazil have differed. And that's, I think, ultimately what's driving this, is like kind of very different takes on not just sort of like estimating production in and of itself in a vacuum, but how those production estimates relate to the usage of soybeans for crush and exports.
This really does come down to the stocks to use figure, or the supply and demand figures when they're put together in that form. Plus one other item, what rolling set of 12 months you use?
Yeah, so the nice thing is that the USDA produces a supply and demand estimates for sort of its global marketing year, which is roughly the marketing year that we have here in the United States. But they also produce a local marketing year estimate that runs from February to January, or approximately the time from the start of harvest in Brazil down through sort of the end of the year when that crop would get used up. The tricky thing is we don't want to estimate, it's really difficult to estimate stocks in the middle of the year when we're sort of like halfway through, using up the production that we produce from any harvest. So they produce an estimate of ending stocks at the end of the year. We show in our article that where they're at, what in USDA's estimation, is basically that pipeline level of stocks. There's very little left over at the end of the year. CONAB hasn't been there for 23-24 for the current marketing year. CONAB is now estimating that they're going to get right down to that pipeline stocks level based on their estimates of current production and what they think of its use. And that's going to have to kind of create a reckoning where at some point we're going to say, you know, maybe our procedures for both estimating production and thinking about usage kind of need to change to kind of come in line with, you know, what's actually happening in the trade. One thing we've seen in the last few months is CONAB keeps dropping their estimates lower. Soybean market, global soybean market, hasn't really sort of responded in the way that they would if we thought that, you know, the Brazilian crop situation was getting much, much tighter than it was before. So I think the market is kind of trading that USDA number on the basis of what we've seen in the last few months in the soybean market.
So in context, a normal stocks to use ratio when the market is in balance is something like 7, 8, 9, 10%, I suppose. And where do we stand and what are the differences between USDA's figures and the CONAB numbers?
Yeah, so for the last 5 years, USDA has had a Brazilian ending stocks to use ratio of about 1.5-ish%. So that's basically what I would say down to pipeline level stocks. There's not much left over at the end of the year. CONAB's numbers 4 or 5 years ago were in that 7-9% ratio. I mean, that's a reasonably well-supplied market where there's, you know, a good amount left over to kind of buffer us against a shock coming next year. They're now down in that area of, you know, about 1.5% stocks to use ratio for this current marketing year. Again, they really can't keep, in one view, underestimating Brazilian soybean production, because if they do, they're going to go bump up against the fact that just ending stocks can't go down below zero. You can't produce an ending stocks estimate that's negative. And so there's going to have to be a reckoning in terms of like their production estimation procedures relative to the data on use.
Why is your argument that their number, at if it's the same as USDA, is wrong? Stocks to use ratio is wrong.
Not wrong, but I mean, USDA and CONAB are getting to that same stocks to use ratio from very different places, from very different estimates of production and use. And so I think ultimately to sort of get a consensus estimate, and I just mean one that's roughly in agreement about the size of the supply and demand situation, like CONAB, if they keep doing what they're doing, they're on a trajectory to sort of bump up against that zero bound on stocks, right? That if they their estimates have been going down, like their estimates of stocks to use ratio have been going down over time, USDA's have been flat. So someone's got to change something to get us a better, clearer consensus view of the supply and demand situation for soybeans in Brazil.
And your expectation and the trade's expectation, maybe better said, is that the USDA is more right than CONAB is.
I think USDA's underlying assumption is that usage of soybeans in Brazil is stronger than greater than the numbers that CONAB produces are suggesting. So they're saying that both exports and domestic crush inside Brazil are bigger than the numbers that CONAB produces. To get there, you have to assume that there are more bushels of soybeans out there to sort of meet that demand. And I think that's the reckoning that needs to occur, is sort of like, what is the true usage number? And I think that's something we're going to follow up on in further FarmDoc daily articles, is thinking about that pace of usage. Specifically, I think the best data that we can get are on exports and what are the flows of soybeans coming out of Brazil from, you know, this current harvest.
So the crux is, if they both agree, relatively speaking, on how much is left at the end of the marketing year, then Brazil's supply side has to be wrong, and that's either an acreage, a yield, or a both function.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, we can't sort of keep getting to the same endpoint from very different numbers. At some point, that's going to cause us a problem in thinking about, you know, the true supply and demand situation.
Joe Jansen is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You may read his article on CONAB and USDA's Brazil soybean figures on the FarmDoc at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu or at willag.org. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us again.
Yeah. We're finally going to warm up, but after that, I don't know.
Well, I suppose that's actually your job, and going to put you on the spot for it.
Yes, that's true. That is what I'm supposed to be able to do. I don't know if anyone believes it or not, though, in the real world out there, but here's what I think. We are going to go back into a wet weather mode here. As we get into the end of this week, it is going to start raining and raining and raining. We have waves of precipitation that will be moving through the Midwest. There are three notable waves that will come in, but there'll be waves within the waves, so to speak. So let's start this way. Our first round of precipitation coming out of Missouri and Iowa into Illinois, Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan, and farther to the north will start tomorrow. We'll see this in the afternoon with storms in Missouri and some light rain showers in Iowa. And then by the time we get to Friday morning, the precipitation will be running over the border into Illinois and parts of Wisconsin. And as we go into the end of the day, Friday into Saturday, we'll get some of that rain in the eastern Midwest. Now, the bulk of the greatest rain with this first round will probably be in the order of 1/2 to 1.5 inches, maybe some local totals to 2 inches, but that won't be too common. And it will be greatest from Illinois westward. I should say Illinois and Wisconsin westward, perhaps. The second round of precipitation will begin almost immediately after that on Saturday night going into Sunday with strong to severe thunderstorms coming out of Kansas and Missouri into Iowa. And then during the day Sunday, that will shift farther to the east. So Sunday into Monday, we'll get another round of significant rain in Illinois and parts of Missouri, Wisconsin. And the system will weaken as it comes across into Indiana, but there will be some rain there too as we get into Monday afternoon and into early Tuesday. The Delta will also get bombarded with a bunch of rain here on this second event. The third event that's going to come along occurs Wednesday into Thursday, maybe into early Friday of next week, so a week from now, and that will just add more punch to the power, so to speak. I think we're probably going to see rain totals for the whole week and a couple of days here running from about 2 to around 4 inches in many of these areas I just mentioned. There is potential for greater amounts. I don't want to focus on those. Nobody does. But there is the potential for perhaps some 4 to 6 and maybe 7 inch amounts in a few spots. I think Missouri is going to be one of those places that's going to get hit with some of the greatest rain. There may be a few counties in western Illinois and maybe southeastern and south central Iowa. And maybe eastern Kansas. These will be the areas that really get the greatest amounts of moisture. We do expect some flooding eventually. It's kind of difficult to say how extensive it'll be. It really depends on how concentrated the heavier rain will be. The easternmost parts of the Midwest, that would be Ohio, Michigan, and maybe the southeast half of Indiana and eastern Kentucky, those areas are probably not going to see nearly as much rain. And so the disruption to farming activity there will be much more brief. Now, before we move out of this, I do want to point out something that, you know, there's been a lot of chatter out there about dryness this summer. And then now there's all this talk that whether this rain's coming up, it blows away the dryness in the summer. I just wanted to point out that we went back and did a study this week looking at years in which we moved from El Nino in January to La Nina by July. And I had 5 years, and all 5 years, when I did a composite for all 5 years, they all had above normal rainfall from Missouri to Wisconsin and parts of Illinois in the spring. And it didn't happen all spring long, but there was an event like this that pushed them over the top. And so this is still right in line with those other years, which did turn drier in the plains and western Corn Belt in late May and especially June and July.
Are there other issues you're watching in the rest of the Northern Hemisphere?
Definitely. First of all, still in the U.S., western Kansas, in southeastern Colorado, down into at least the northwest half of the Texas Panhandle, that area is going to be drying down for a while. we're already a bit dry there. You look at the soil assessment, it's pretty darn dry in some of that region. So crop moisture stress will be on the rise there. The one thing that's missing is a lot of heat. And so the crops may hang in there for a little while, but it will be turning warmer as we move into May. And without rain, obviously that raises some concerns for the dryland crop there. Also in Northern Hemisphere and dryness, we are looking at still Russia's southern region, portions of Kazakhstan, and eastern Ukraine. These areas are all still drying down. They've been drying out since, gosh, I think it's been since the early part of March. But it's only recently been hot enough to really accelerate that drying trend, and the ground is definitely firming up now. We do have a little break coming up where they will see cooler temperatures and a few showers, but there's not going to be a big general soaking. And we fully expect the ridge of high pressure responsible for all this to return later in May and June. This is also one of those El Nino to La Nina phenomenons that occur in this situation. And I think we will be seeing more of a dryness issue in that part of the world later this spring. Also in the Northern Hemisphere, we have flooding coming up again for southern China. Last weekend, portions of Guangdong, China, which is a major rice-producing province, had rainfall that ranged up to 16 1/4 inches. And widespread rain amounts probably in the 7 to 12-inch range. And some of the neighboring provinces were impacted as well. Well, that we took a little break, I think Monday and Tuesday, and starting tonight and especially tomorrow on into all of next week, it will rain frequently in that very same area again. And similar amounts of rain are likely, so probably 5 to 15 inches of additional rain. So some serious flooding and rice impact in that part of the world. In key coarse grain and oilseed areas in China, we're in pretty good shape. Some of the winter wheat region in northern China is a little too dry, and that may continue for a little while longer. Lastly, in the northern hemisphere, parts of France will probably also get involved with some heavy rain next week, and some flooding may occur there too. And I should point out, earlier this week, I think it was yesterday morning, hard freezes occurred across the heart of Europe, and there's a lot of talk about damage done to rapeseed there, and certainly some of the flowering fruit trees in that part of the world. And so outside of all that, the only other place that you'd like to know about maybe is in southern Brazil, where yet another flood event is expected over this coming week. Rio Grande do Sul, where about half of the soybeans remain to be harvested, will be subjected to between 4 and let's say 8 inches of rain, with some potential for 10-inch plus amounts in a couple of spots.
Thank you, Drew. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willhe.org, or search out the Closing Market Report in your favorite podcast applications, including Apple and Spotify, and you can find us on the FarmDoc YouTube website. That's youtube.com/@FarmDoc. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.